This program is made possible with grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts, because a great nation deserves great art. Additional funds from Saul and Stanley Zabar in memory of their parents, Louis and Lillian Zabar, Russian immigrants who founded Zabar's more than 70 years ago. Zabar's, a New York landmark, supplies food and delicacies to New Yorkers and to the nation, on the web at zabars.com. Additional support from Edwin A. Goodman, Harvey and Thelma Reisman, the John L. Loeb Jr. Foundation, from Frost, Zelnick, Lehrman, and Zissou, specializing in intellectual property law for clients worldwide, on the web at frostzelnick.com, and from one anonymous donor.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
This is Only in America, 350 years of the American Jewish experience. I'm Larry Josephson. We call this program White Christmas, the story of the Jews who created Tin Pan Alley and Hollywood, Part 1. God Bless America is as American as apple pie. So are the movies. In fact, these quintessentially American art forms were created by Yiddish-speaking Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe.
The amazing thing is that they found a business in which they could literally manufacture the American dream.
My name is Adolf Zucker.
I personally love Westerns, always did. The people going west, developing and struggled. It's American history. That's America.
Tin Pan Alley was the name given to the music publishing business from the 1880s through the 1940s. Songwriters cranked out sheet music for stage performers and for families gathered around the piano in the parlor before radio and the phonograph were invented. Nearly everyone who worked in Tin Pan Alley was Jewish.
For the first time since ancient history, Jewish music through Jewish creators and authors became part of the mainstream of American culture, of the dominant culture.
Composer Jack Gottlieb has written extensively about the Jewish influence on the music of Tin Pan Alley. Its roots are in Yiddish culture and the cantorial music of the synagogue. Composers like Irving Berlin and George Gershwin were sons of Jewish immigrants or immigrants themselves.
We really think you ought to know that we were born right in the middle of darkest Russia.
Now, they all came out of the Russian-Jewish Pale of Settlement.
In darkest Russia.
And they were confined in sort of a very large geographical area like a cattle pen and had great trouble going into the big cities. But St. Petersburg had a fantastic conservatory with its famous violin teacher, Leopold Auer.
When we began, our notes were sour, until a man, Professor Auer.
If you succeeded and became a star pupil in the conservatory, that was a permit to let you travel to other parts of Russia. And I think that is one of the reasons why there were so many accomplished Jewish musicians. So there were a plethora of great violin virtuosi who studied with Professor Auer. And in fact, the Gershwins wrote a song about it called Misha Yasha Shasha Tasha, in which they make great fun of those names and how they were part of this Professor Auer milieu.
We were 3 years older, so we started in to play the fiddle.
And that refers to Misha Elman, Yasha Heifetz, Tasha Seidel, and Sasha Jacobson.
Temperamental, oriental gentlemen are we. Misha, Yasha, Tasha, Sasha, fiddly, diddly, dee. Shakespeare says what's in a name, with him we disagree. Names like Sammy, Max, or Mo never bring the heavy dough.
Yasha, Tasha, Sasha, fiddly-diddly-dee.
Ladies and gentlemen, the fellow who really leads the parade, Irving Berlin.
Thank you, Al, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I wish I could make an appropriate speech, but speech-making simply is out of my reach. So what can a songwriter do? What can a songwriter say? A fiddler can speak with his fiddle.
He sang in his father's shul, and he says, I suppose it was singing in my father's shul that got into my blood and stimulated my musicality. The name Berlin came about because of a printer's error. It wasn't something that he did, and he liked it when he saw that on the song sheet for Sweet Marie from Sunny Italy.
But his original name was?
Isidore Berlin. Early on, he wrote one of the most interesting ethnic novelties, Yiddle on Your Fiddle, Play Some Ragtime.
Yiddle on your fiddle, in the middle, play some ragtime.
Hard to link up the Irving Berlin of White Christmas with this. This is.
Let's just say there was great growth going on here.
Play for safety, some more ragtime. Yiddle on your fiddle, play some ragtime.
How did Irving Berlin go from Yiddle, play the fiddle, to God Bless America and make the transition from being a Yiddish-inflected composer to a super American one?
It's very simple. He was just reflecting the times.
Come on in here, come on in here, Alexander's Ragtime Band.
Alexander's Ragtime Band was his first breakout hit, one that was obviously not Jewish.
It's the best band in the land.
He had to go out and earn a living because his father died early, and he had to sustain his mother especially. Ragtime was hot.
Oh, my honey lamb, come on along, and let me take you by
the hand. Up to the man, who is the leader of the band, and if you carry the Sonny River, play it in right.
I'd like to talk a little bit about synagogue, cantorial-influenced music.
There are three important modes in synagogue music. What is a mode? A mode is not a scale. It is a combination of little motifs, like beads that are strung on a necklace, that combine into various kinds of necklaces. The most important for the purposes of my research is the mode called Adonai Malach, meaning the Lord is King, based on, I believe, Psalm 93. It's a major mode. It's not minor. Here's a major scale. And the major third is in the bottom. I'll count. One, two, three, four, five. Now, let me take five again and go a half step below five. Raise four to five. Flat at six. Above five. So it's this kind of blue clash that became very prominent in so-called blue music. That spilled over into all kinds of popular songs.
Could you give an example of where a cantorial piece of music found its way into popular music?
I might be able to fumble my way through Forget Your Troubles, Come On, Get Happy.
Right.
Now, the Adonai Malach mode in the synagogue is sung. Adonai Malach Eus Lavesh, Lavesh Adonai. Forget your troubles, come on, get happy.
You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day. The sun is shining, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. We're going to the promised land.
Now, I think it's fair to point out that Berlin and Gershwin weren't thinking of minor thirds, or it was all subconscious.
Part of the equation is that these composers came from Yiddish-speaking households, and that's bound to seep into a talented youngster's consciousness as he's growing up. So, for example, Richard Rodgers did not grow up in a Yiddish-speaking household. And there are a few little things here and there that you might say sound Jewishly based, but that was not part of his milieu.
Now, Berlin, at some point in the 30s, becomes more American than America. And for example, White Christmas, which not only feeds Protestant iconography back to a Protestant country, but de-Christianizes it. You quote in your book, Philip Roth.
Correct. In Operation Shylock, he said,
God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, and then he gave Irving Berlin Easter Parade and White Christmas, the two holidays that celebrate the divinity of Christ. And what does Irving Berlin do? He de-Christs them both. Easter turns into a fashion show, and Christmas into a holiday about snow.
Just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Then there's God Bless America.
Land that I love.
It comes from the 1920s or even earlier. And then Kate Smith came across it, and she was the first to trumpetize it through her incredible voice on the radio. And now it's become almost the second anthem of America.
There's certainly no Yiddish influence in White Christmas, Easter Parade, or God Bless America.
Right. But if you take a song like Stepping Out with My Baby, Fred Astaire's the theme song almost,
right,
you'll hear it there. And we could hear an example from a Purim song called Heint ist Purim, Kind Brider. And I think you'll hear the influence then and there.
Heint ist Purim, Brider, es ist a Yom Tov Kreuz, lamm mir singen Lieder.
I'm stepping out with my baby. Can't go wrong, cause I'm in right. It's for sure, not for maybe.
This is their Yontif voice.
Stepping out with my honey. Can't be bad to feel so good. Never felt quite so sunny.
This is their Yontif voice.
They'll be smooth sailing, cause I'm trimming my sail.
One of Harold Arlen's great songs is Come Rain or Come Shine. He wrote with Johnny Mercer.
I'm gonna love you like nobody's loved you. Come rain or come shine.
It has a kind of recitative repetitions of the same note that you can hear very much in a Jewish chant from Russia based on the Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim. This is not a deliberate evocation of the chant. It's just something that comes out of Arlen's background.
I'm gonna love you like nobody's loved you, come rain or come shine.
Dear Asherim, Kihi Tovim.
Come rain or come shine.
But it doesn't sound obviously Jewish. I mean, that is your knowledge of the...
It's my insight.
Right.
But you have to keep also in mind that Shir HaShirim is about love. And so is Come Rain or Come Shine.
You're gonna love me like nobody's loved me. Come rain or come shine.
Now, the question is this plagiarism or was this unconscious absorption of...
Absolutely.
...of your musical roots?
Coming from that particular milieu, the Lower East Side, attending the Yiddish theater, having a background of an itinerant cantor, a mother speaking Yiddish, all these things seep in. You have to also keep in mind that the Yiddish theater was chock full of religious icons. There were synagogue scenes and services going on and cantorial things. And sometimes the theater itself seemed to be more like a synagogue, and the synagogue seemed to be more like a theater. I have found over and over that the sons of cantors had an easy time of it with their fathers because their fathers were a role model. Their fathers were singers, after all.
Right.
And Harold Arlen's father, who's a cantor, often would weave his son's melodies into the service itself. Take a song like, say, it's only a paper moon.
It is only a paper moon hanging over a cardboard sea. But wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me.
The Kiddush, the famous Kiddush done every week of Lewandowski, Kivanu v'chata v'yatanu kidashta. I mean, it's almost literal.
But you wouldn't think if you heard that, that that was at all influenced by music from the synagogue.
Again, you have to take into account the conditioning, the upbringing of the writer. So if it were Richard Rodgers writing that, I would say that's a coincidence. But not in the case of Harold Arlen. He had to have heard that tune. It was prominent.
Probably his most famous score, anyway, is The Wizard of Oz, which he wrote with Gip Harburg.
Right.
Certainly in Somewhere Over the Rainbow, I don't hear any Yiddish melody.
But there is a yearning in the lyric itself for an ideal utopia, for a yearning for Zion, if you will. And that's a theme that gets caught up in Yiddish songs of all kinds.
I want to talk about the relationship between George Gershwin and what was at the time called Negro music, Negro spirituals. And of course, the apotheosis of this was Porgy and Bess. We hear a lot of this in Gershwin's music. For example, the opening clarinet wail in Rhapsody in Blue. Now, I hear certainly Jewish influences, and I hear jazz and blues, and the blues, of course, come from African-American traditions. All these influences melded together.
There have been critics who believe that that is a klezmer wail. The truth of the matter is that at a rehearsal, the clarinetist, I think it was Russ Gorman, was fooling around. And he was making some kind of distortions with his embouchure, with the mouthpiece. And he created something like that beginning, and Gershwin liked it so much, he put it in. There's so much in Gershwin having to do with the Adonai Melach mode that I mentioned earlier, Porgy and Bess, the most potent example, it seems to me. Oh, Lord, I'm on my way. Which is the Adonai Malach mode. Adonai Malach Geus Lavesh. There's a Yiddish lullaby. Pi-pi-pi-pi-pi, de tate nishtohi, vuyus tate geforin kein stri. Summertime is a lullaby.
Thank you.
Jews in the entertainment field went through several cycles of not disguising their Jewishness, then in the time of radio and films, taking other names. But Sophie Tucker,
who was Sophie Abuza,
she sang My Yiddish Mama, and she did a whole schmaltzy shtick. She did not disguise her Jewishness, and I believe she performed for non-Jewish audiences as well.
My Yiddish mama, I'd love to kiss that wrinkled brow. I long to hold her hands once more, as in days gone by, and ask her to forgive me for things I did that made her cry.
There's a lot of ethnic variety on the vaudeville circuit, including cantors. So one of the most famous cantors of the day is Yesler Rosenblatt. He also went on the vaudeville circuit singing religious material. So there were tearjerkers like Eli Eli or El Mole Rachamim, which became so powerful in the case of Eli Eli that blacks took it over and sang it, Ethel Waters.
I want to move now to Jewish composers whose work did not seem to have any Jewish content at all. And I'm thinking of Richard Rodgers, Oscar Hammerstein, and Larry Hart. You think of Rodgers and Hart as very sophisticated,
right,
very urban. When you say Richard Rodgers, and certainly Rodgers and Hammerstein, you think of Oklahoma, Carousel.
Right. Sound of Music.
The whole line, and there's certainly nothing Jewish about
those. Except in Oklahoma, they use the flatted six, and it's such a poignant moment, Out of My Dreams.
Out of my dreams and into the hush of falling.
Here comes the flatted six.
But it's safe to say that that is a point that only a musicologist would get.
But if you heard it without that blue note, that flatted six, you would be getting a different kind of message from the song. The poignancy would be lost.
Into a dream with you.
I want to move now to someone you had a long association with, Leonard Bernstein. You were his assistant for many years. Bernstein has a deep association with Jewish music. After all, he wrote Kaddish, one of his serious works. But you say in the book, an association I never made, is that the opening of the overture to Candide used a shofar call. A shofar, of course, is the ram's horn that is blown at the beginning of Rosh Hashanah and also in the Yom Kippur service. You're right.
Tekiya.
Tekiya, you're absolutely right. And also in the dance sequence in West Side Story.
Well, it's a shofar at the beginning of symphonic dances from West Side Story. The whistle, the calls of the Jets and the Sharks is really a shofar call.
Now that you pointed out, I see it, but I've heard that 100 times and never occurred
to
me.
No reason why you should.
There's a high rate of assimilation among Jews today. There aren't a lot of Jewish composers of the kind of Berlin, Arlen, Gershwin. There's been a kind of diminution of Jewish composers.
I don't think there's a diminution of the numbers of them, but I'm saying that with the fading of the first generation and now with the more acculturated or assimilated Jews that have grown up since then, there's not that background of hearing Yiddish in the household or going to the synagogue, certainly the Yiddish theater. There used to be the writer and then the writer would give to the performer. But now the performers are also the writers. And those writers have grown up, of course, with a rock and roll sensibility. So it's just a different ballgame.
That was composer Jack Gottlieb, who wrote, "Funny It Doesn't Sound Jewish, How Yiddish Songs and Synagogue Melodies Influenced Tin Pan Alley, Broadway, and Hollywood." Not all of the Tin Pan Alley composers were Jewish. One notable exception was Cole Porter, an upper-class WASP. He wrote some of the most sophisticated and most memorable songs.
You're the top, you're the Colosseum, you're the top, you're the Louvre Museum, you're a melody from a symphony by Strauss, you're a Bendel bonnet, a Shakespeare sonnet, you're Mickey Mouse.
We're listening to White Christmas, the story of the Jews who created Tin Pan Alley and Hollywood, Part 1. I'm Larry Josephson. We'll be back in a moment.